Welcome to Women's Words, a program bringing you the written work of the women of Minnesota.
My name is Diana Hunter, and I'm a writer from Duluth, Minnesota. I'm going to read an excerpt from a memoir called The Dead Cow and the Great Man. On a map, Lake Superior seems to point like a giant finger at my farm, directing rain and snow from the east and sometimes pinning a westerly weather system in place right over our neighborhood, until we can't drive our tractors into the fields because of too much water in one state of matter or another. I hang my coat on a nail inside the barn door and go to work in coveralls and tall rubber boots. 30 Holsteins turn their heads and bellow when I yell, "Hello, girls!" A timer has switched on the lights. I adopted this low-cost innovation after I read in a farm magazine that more hours of light stimulate cows' hormone production and increase milk production. "That's using your noodle," the electrician said when he installed the timer. Of course, my dad would say it's crazy. You know how the old-timers can be. I did, and I do, from both sides now. I was 36 then, now I'm 64. I understand that the nostalgia of old-timers comes from wanting to hold on to things we love, though we can't. The tragedy of nostalgia is that we have to be prepared to let go and accept that everything we love is destined to transform into something else. In 1986, I start the automatic system that sanitizes the milking equipment. Then I scramble up the ladder to the loft and throw down the cow's morning snack of 5 40-pound hay bales. When I climb back down, I see my lover at the end of the feed aisle, ready to drive to work in her red wool coat and polyester slacks. No gloves, no hat, slightly frazzled hair, a round, kind face. She says nervously, "You're going to milk early tonight, right?" "That's the plan," I answer, breaking bales over my knee and spreading chunks down the feed aisle. That sounded a little qualified, I realize. I know she worries that I work too much and we don't do enough fun things together. "Your idea of a good time," she once complained, "is going to the farm supply store in Moose Lake." I add, "I really do want to see this guy." The cows are on their feet now, reaching and stretching to get each other's hay, except for Lena, who stands oddly still and disengaged. Is it my imagination, or does she look a little woozy? "Norman Myers," Cedar says. That's the guy's name. It occurs to me that she might think I don't remember anything she's told me about this famous scientist she's booked to speak at a nearby environmental learning center. "I haven't forgotten," I assure her. "I'll be ready." Cedar coordinates volunteers in the northern part of Minnesota for the Environmental Education Board, a state agency with a few paid staffers who help local people plan and run programs. The northern volunteers are all coming together to hear Myers talk about preserving forest animals by preserving their habitats, and I want to see my girlfriend basking in her accomplishment. After she leaves, I get the milking machines ready and feed the cows the first of 3 daily rations of grain. After eating and letting down their milk, the lotus eaters lie in their stalls, regurgitating and re-chewing their food. Chewing their cud is a disgusting-sounding but necessary process. Cows' rumens, the first of 4 stomachs, break down food with the help of bacteria, like 45-gallon brewery vats. I've had to learn that I'm feeding microorganisms as well as cows, and the best way to keep a healthy fermentation going is to feed small, alternating amounts throughout the day. It takes time, but saves on veterinary bills. When I get to Lena, I notice that she hasn't touched her grain. Her neighbor kneels in the next stall, reaching for it with a long tongue. She scrambles to her feet while I tamp her flank. This neighbor cow is a graceful scamp with a wild topknot. At 19, she's the oldest cow in the herd, and also the most wily. When I let the cows loose to walk to and from pasture, she watches for me to get busy, then sneaks into the feed aisle to eat whatever she finds. I've named her Deb for the singer Debbie Harry, but I call her the punk rocker. After milking, I phone the veterinarian and get his mother. When he calls back, he says he'll come after lunch. I feed another round of hay and then go outside to feed the horses, chickens, and young cattle. When I return to clean the barn, a euphemistic expression that means taking out the manure, I see Lena lying awfully still. I investigate and find that she's dead. I'm shocked. Cows almost never get sick and die so fast. The vet calls before I've left the barn, and I let my worst fear slip. Could she have had some kind of disease that the rest of the herd might come down with, too? "I doubt it," he says, and I feel some relief. I've come to trust this hometown prodigal with shoulder-length hair and a long, serious face that reminds me of David Carradine's character, the Drifter Kane, in the 70s TV western Kung Fu. Like me, the vet is in his mid-30s and making a post-hippie stab at a career meant to provide some financial security. He says he'll come by later in the afternoon. Not after lunch, I ask? Well, I've got some other calls to make. But I've got to milk early tonight. I told Cedar I'd go to a thing with her. After a long pause, he says, I'll do my best. I understand that he can't rank my dead cow ahead of other people's living animals. So now it's up to me to do what I can to move things along so that I'm ready whenever he shows up. I clean the cow's stalls, scraping the manure and dirty bedding into the gutter behind them. As I work around Lena's body, I feel sad. She was a decent cow, easy to work with, a good producer. Beyond that, my internal eulogy loses steam. She weighs around 1,400 pounds, and I've become the problem solver who needs to figure out how to get that dead weight out of the barn. I think about leaving her until tomorrow, and I think about having to look at her body for another day. And then there's the unfortunate fact that my loan officer is due to visit in the morning. I decide on a plan involving a rope, a tractor, a chain, and a come-along that I hope is stout enough for the job. The come-along is a tool made of pulleys, cables, and a ratcheting handle that increases mechanical advantage. It lets a farmer pull things she would not be able to budge with body strength alone. The punk rocker watches with her neck cranked as I approach with a stout, short chain and wrap it around Lena's back legs above the hock joints. I slip the top hook around one of the chain links, where it should hold. I don't cry because I can't afford the loss of control. I remind myself that Lena can't feel anything. To the chain, I hook one end of the come-along. I attach the other end to an upright post secured between the floor and ceiling beam by the weight of the hay in the loft. I pump the handle, hoping for the best. It pumps hard. I need to use most of my strength. But it works. Lena slides into the center aisle, a fraction of an inch at a time. The whites of the punk rocker's eyes show, all the way around her irises. You better watch out, I tell her. This could happen to you.
To listen to this episode again or subscribe to the podcast, and for more information about this author and her work, go to kumd.org and click on Programs, then Women's Words. Women authors of Minnesota who would like to read their work on Women's Words are welcome to submit their writing via email to kumd@kumd.org. Women's Words is produced at KUMD by Chris Harwood. The assistant producer is Haley Westfall. Music by Sharon Isbin. Funding for this program is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.